I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome, everyone, to Soul School, Lesson 37, Why We Dress Animals Up in Clothes and We Think God Has Hands. I don't know if you read the stories of Peter Cottontail and all those adventures and all the different childhood books that dressed up animals in human clothing, but I love them. As a kid, I remember my favorite story of all was Goodnight Moon. It was also rabbits in clothing and in a room and the quiet old woman whispering hush. And I just love them. And I think it's because the animals, while as cute as they were, reminded me of myself and my surroundings. We try to domesticate animals and we try to kind of make them in our image. We put dogs in clothing and we see these animals all dressed up. We try to make them look like us, and we don't even think about that any dog, no matter how domesticated and how inbred and unable to handle itself in the wild, would be just as happy to run over to some roadkill, all squished on the road, eat it up, throw it up, eat it again, and be perfectly happy doing that, and doing the most unhuman things imaginable, because it's an animal. But it doesn't change the fact that we still try to make dogs in our image and we try to personify them. And it's because we have these human brains that are so socially wired and we try to impose our humanity on all kinds of things, even inanimate objects. And this was always true in the course of Homo sapiens and our species going way back even to pre-humans. And that's why, as people tried to organize their world and tried to make sense from chaos, humans would personify things like thunder and lightning and forces of nature. They would become personified and deified. And people would attribute human qualities to these natural things in nature that would occur. It was just natural to do that, to take human traits and try to superimpose them and to think of those things that were chaotic and powerful as supernatural. And this is really part and parcel for idol worship and paganism in the ancient world. And even today, we continue to personify things that are inanimate objects or that give agency to things that have no agency at all. And I think that that is a call to us to understand how the human brain works and to understand, even in a deeper and hopefully more mature way, how the divine works in our lives, and to leave behind some of the superstitions and some of the personification that we do. I don't think it's completely 100% possible to leave it all behind because it's so ingrained in us. But I want to put out a challenge for you to stretch yourself in those ways. And I'm just as guilty as the next person. And so what I'm about to say, coming from an evangelical background, is a challenge, and it might even be offensive to some people listening, but I'm going to throw it out there because I think it's worth hearing something that might make you grow and see God or the divine in a new light, in a way that will maybe grow and stretch you in ways that you need to be grown and stretched. In thinking of the Bible, and thinking of how ancient people saw the world in pagan terms and from their pagan surroundings, they would impose human qualities on everything around them, including the divine, including God, including Yahweh. And that's why the Bible's written for people to understand in an easy way, just like storybooks written about animals are written for people to understand in a certain way and are illustrated with animals wearing clothing. Animals don't like clothing. And they don't like to wear it. And maybe occasionally a dog will like to wear a jacket, but typically rabbits are not real comfortable in jeans. And the way the Bible was written, it was written giving God all kinds of human attributes so we could understand God better, so the people of the time could understand God better, because their brains were trying to wrap around these concepts. And a story is better told about the unseen God in ways that people can understand it, as though God has hands, as though God sits on a throne, as though God has a face. And storytelling is better that way. And men wrote the Bible inspired by God, but when Moses says that God's finger wrote the Ten Commandments, that's figurative because God simply does not have fingers, and it is figurative. A lot of people think, well, the Bible says it, it has to be true. But the fact is, we anthropomorphize God all the time to try to understand God better. And even when I say him, I give myself away and I give my own background away that I, by just habit, think of God as a him or speak of God as a him because the old language is still stuck in my brain primarily. Of course, God isn't not a him or a her. God is spirit, and the Bible says God is spirit, and of course we all know that we're not foolish enough to think God is a man in the sky or sitting on a real throne and, you know, floating in heaven with a beard. We know that really in our adult brains, and maybe our childhood minds would think that that was true, but when we really give it good thought, we know, well, that can't really be true. That is one way to understand God and one way to identify with God in our humanness. But of course, what we're talking about is God is the source of all things. One way to understand the Bible and how it's written lovingly for us to understand and connect with the divine and our Creator is to understand love songs. And so if we think about just totally falling for someone, totally falling in love, we are enraptured by this mystery. We are so taken over by something wild that's happening to us, maybe in a chemical level, maybe on a connectional level. And we're so in love. We want to write about it, but we know that words don't quite work. But yet we'll try, and we'll try to write some sort of love poetry or some sort of love song. And we write it out. It is not as if love itself wrote the song with a finger, but love inspired the song. And without that love, no song would have been written. And the song had to be written because the heart is so full, our heart, if you will, or something inside us is so full and overflowing, we had to write that song. And it was inspired. Love inspired it. And yet, love couldn't actually pen the song. It needed us as a vehicle. And I think if we think of the Bible as inspired in that sort of way, we can move away a little bit from anthropomorphizing God and putting all these human qualities on God who is not human. And when we say that God has made us in God's image, that is to say that we have the qualities of God, not human qualities, that God is human, but that we have the qualities of creating like God and loving as God would love in compassionate loving and grace. It is not to say that God is human like us with our frailties, weaknesses, and foolishness. And so that when Jesus came into the world fully human, but then was incarnated with spirit, then Jesus proceeded as human to live an incarnated life filled with the spirit. And that led Jesus as a man to live a different sort of life, a life that was full of service, standing up for the oppressed, healing people, doing for others, and leading in a way that was very upside down compared to the culture that he was living in. He was not interested in political power, although his friends misunderstood that and thought he would overthrow the Romans and become a king. They were ready to force him to be king, and they were ready to take up arms against the Romans and do a revolt. And Jesus was not interested in that. He was interested in a different way, where he demonstrated that in washing the feet of the disciples. And he said, whoever wants to lead must serve. And he did this real weird object lesson where he takes off his outer clothing and just wraps himself in a towel, just like a poor servant would do, a nobody would do. Then he goes about washing their stinky feet. This would be an outrageous act in that culture. Outrageous. It would be the most menial task. And they all got really embarrassed about it, even offended. And he was trying to show them that this is the incarnated life. The spirit-filled life is the life of love and service and deference to others. And in that life, we find meaning. And that is what it is to be inspired. And so when we just attribute human qualities to God, and we attribute like human wrath, for instance, to God as how we might wipe out our enemies, because we're attributing our human qualities of how we would do it onto God, or we're superimposing some sort of human way of doing things onto spirit, which is God, we're going to be very confused in what God is really like. We're going to be very confused when we encounter terrible suffering, and we're going to say, why would you let this happen, God? As if we're speaking to a really big human. It's just not the way to see God at all. We lay this blame at God's feet. See what I'm saying? At God's feet. God doesn't have feet. We have no feet to lay this at. We do have the cross to lay the blame, and that is where everything was paid. And that's why the Christian story is so compelling, because in this Christ, and we could say the cosmic Christ and the Trinity, which I'll get into in some other time on Soul School, about the power of this concept of the Trinity is very, very compelling. But this idea that sacrifice is part and parcel to the human experience and is epitomized in this life of Christ and the cosmic Christ being this overarching meta truth that we can tap into and live in common life together for each other, with each other, and never abandoning each other, is incredibly powerful and is life-changing and life-transforming. I've been changed by it, and I know many people have been changed by it. It is the power of this transformation that gives us hope and gives us a sense that redemption and healing of the world is possible. And I wouldn't say that unless I have seen evidence of it and proof of it, but I have seen it. I work with the incarcerated population, and I have seen lives changed because I've seen how things can be redeemed and renewed. And so my homework for you this week, as I give homework out every week for Soul School, is to question your assumptions about how you see the divine. When you come up with human qualities for God, put those in check. When you think of God as having hands or having anger like your anger or something that is human, that is a limiting quality we give God. And we're going to do it. It's going to be automatic because we're humans and we impose our traits onto others. We'll impose it on our pets. We'll impose it on our possessions. That's natural, but it is still limiting. And any quality we give God is essentially limiting because God is really limitless. And as soon as we figure out who or what God is, we've got it wrong because there is no figuring that out. It's beyond reason. It's not really reasonable. Just like love is sort of boundless and not totally understandable and it's quite mysterious, it really is the same way. God is love. And so that is a good way to try to understand sort of what we're talking about the divine. I would just encourage you to leave behind some of those limiting beliefs and ideas about what the divine can be, that the divine does not have human qualities. Those qualities are just used to give us a taste of some of the attributes of God, but they really fall short of what we're talking about. And there is so much more to be had. There is so much more love to embrace when it comes to the divine, and you can embrace it all. It's like going from a little TV dinner to a whole banquet table. And so I hope that you feel blessed by that good news. If you would like to support what I'm doing, you can rate this show on iTunes. It just takes a few seconds. Or if you'd like to support the show monthly, you can do that for $1 a month at Patreon. That's patron with an E, patreon.com/sparkmymuse. And that will actually let you in to access some new events that are live that are coming up. And at $5 a month, you'll get even more access to some live classes and Q&As and some really fun stuff we're doing as a tribe and as a group. And I'm very excited what the summer and the fall holds for this show and this program. We're working together collaboratively as listeners and creators. And there's a lot of fun coming up, a lot of great guests. So thank you so much for listening. And I hope the show has brought you some insight and some encouragement and maybe even some healing. And I would be very appreciative if you would pass it along to others. I love you, and I wish God's blessing on you. come to sparkmymuse.com for show notes to this episode and all episodes. There will be links to the people, books, and resources mentioned in the show, and sometimes you'll find photos or embedded videos too, and lots of other goodies.